Buongiorno.
Buongiorno and bienvenue.
Yeah.
How are you?
I was thinking about Italy earlier today. I want to go back. It was nice there. I would prefer to be there than here.
You sure?
Oh yeah, very much so.
You should.
Unquestionably.
Well, I will. I'm not going to be in Italy, but I will be.
You're going to the Italy of Eastern Europe.
Sure. I will see what Andre has to say about that. But I'm going to be. I'm going to be in Vienna and then Croatia. And I'm actually going to rendezvous with Andre and his lovely wife and his little baby girl. Be at the beach there, the Adriatic beach. So, they got a sea, by the way, the Adriatic. So that's what that is.
That sounds
It's
sounds
water.
like it's gonna be pleasant.
Like any good vacation, I'm looking forward to not being at work. So that is
That is one of the primary components of
that
vacation, isn't it?
that is the most important thing to me right at the current moment. But I'm sure I will enjoy the rest.
You gonna go in the water? You gonna do some swimming?
I don't really like beaches.
You don't like you don't okay, hang on. To clarify. You don't like the entity that is known as the beach, or you don't like the activities that people typically perform at the beach?
Both.
This just because you don't like to sweat?
Yes. And I don't like sunscreen lotion because it makes me feel gross. But I have to wear it, otherwise I instantly burn.
Oh.
I'm either pale white, pale white pink, or scarlet red. Those are the two options.
All right, you get a pass then because Amanda's like that too. I get a little pink these days too, but when I was younger, I would be either the color that I am or like dark brown. Like those are the only two colors that I was capable of producing. And I didn't get a sunburn, I think, until I was like 25.
Yeah, well, I have a history of various sun-related skin cancers in the family, so I'm, minimizing my recreational solar activities. But I'm still looking forward to it. I like being near a beach because there's usually good stuff near beaches, like.
Like margaritas and other fruity alcoholic beverages.
Yeah, although I'm sure it's going to be like Aperol Spritz every 5 feet, on the shore over
What?
there.
Who would be ordering Aperol spritzes all the
No,
time?
no one I know. No one you've met.
Gonna get off the plane and go right to the duty free shop and buy a bottle of Aperol.
No. It's all about those beach clubs, Dan. Jason loves those beach clubs. Yeah.
Was it like Daytona Beach, like clubs where they have like the dance clubs right out there by the beach?
No, it's really weird. And when we were in France and when we were in Italy, there aren't a lot of public beaches. Like companies actually buy up strips of the beach, and they like control that, the sand and everything. And you basically pay them euros in order to rent a chair there, they'll have like a drink service and stuff like that. But like. That's the sort of beach experience that's there. Also, a lot of the beaches usually wind up being like gravel and small rocks and not like sand. Like
There's
when it,
nothing worse than a gravel beach because you're
yeah.
all excited to get out there and to relax and in the nice soft sand, and then it's just pebbles poking you in the feet.
Yeah, and last year, this time last year, when we went to Positano, and we were on the shore there. There was one day where it was decided that it would be our beach day, and we would not be doing any trips or anything else like that. We would go down to the one of the little beach things, and we'd rent the chairs. Of course, it's overcast and super gross, and it's been raining off and on all week. And so we get down there, and I'm like, hey, "Do you really want to pay for it?" And we can do it. And it's like, "Well, let's pay the 40 euro one to be like in the front row." I'm like, "What? Are you crazy? Like, front row of what? It's gray and nasty outside. Just get the cheap ones in the back.
You gotta get a good view of the ocean there.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was not all it was cracked up to be. We basically stayed there for, I think, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours, I think, total. Mm. I think Jason was just very determined to have that experience.
Instagram a picture of his feet with in the sand, then say Italy.
Well, it wasn't sand. It was rocks. Oh,
right, pebbles, of course.
Yeah. And it was the same thing when we were at St. John Cap Ferrat, which is like this little peninsula that sticks out next to Nice. And that was all rocks there too. It's very pretty. But mm-hmm. like it's not cozy for your feet. So, yeah.
For that, you need a nice little island on the east coast of the United States.
Yeah, and since everybody and their grandmothers smokes in Europe, they're just cigarette butts in between all the little pieces of gravel.
Oh, sure. I mean, a beach is basically a giant ashtray.
Yeah, I mean, you can just put out a cigarette anywhere. You want to start a fire or anything.
On the ground, on the arm of the waiter who brought you the wrong drink.
I was getting out of my car the other day, and I almost stepped on a cigarette butt, which somebody had obviously put out when they got out of their car, because otherwise it wouldn't be next to where a car door would open. And I was just like, this is super disgusting. Thanks for doing that, person.
You were disgusted by an old put-out cigarette butt?
Yeah, I mean, it's gross. It's been in somebody's mouth. They've been breathing through it with their lungs and stuff, and then they smushed on it, and it's just there for me to step on and get their... mouth germs on my shoe.
Right. Yeah, you know, there are animals outdoors, right? And they like just like pee on the ground and stuff.
I know.
There are worse things to touch the bottom of your foot.
There's just something about looking at it. Like, if you don't know that it's there, then fine, whatever. But if you're like staring right at something that's been inside somebody's mouth and has been put out on the ground, it's like, I'm just going to make the extra effort to not step on it.
You're very hung up on this thing that's been in somebody's mouth. It's not like it's food or something. It's a piece of paper.
Yeah, but it doesn't need to have been chewed in order to be gross.
I think it kind of does.
Okay. If somebody licked your iPhone...
No, see, that's different. You're talking about my iPhone, not the bottom of my shoe.
Okay. All right. Fine, then. Touché.
Is there just, like, an absence of, like, doormats at all of the buildings in L.A.? You can't just, like, wipe your feet when you get somewhere?
Generally, there's not a lot of doormats, but no. Again, the point of the story, I don't really like beaches, and a lot of times I don't like gross cigarette butts that happen to be at many beaches. So there you have it.
Mm.
But I am excited to go see Andre and experience all that Croatia has to offer, because it has been talked up a bit by our by our friend. So I am looking forward. But I don't like beaches in general, even here in the United States. On a small island off New England. Very, very, very much like our protagonist in this film named Jaws.
He's Chief Jaws.
Yes, Chief Jaws.
Chief Jaws, head of police.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's from the big city, New York.
Yeah, and he just doesn't like beaches and swimming and all that other stuff. So he wants to stay on dry land. And if somebody says, why'd you move on to an island? So, you know, it's kind of funny. Mm.
Mm-hmm. So, not to like, out you here specifically at the top of the show.
Go for it. Let's do it.
You haven't seen Jaws before. You've seen parts of Jaws? Some of Jaws? All of Jaws? What have you seen?
I have seen cobbled together bits of almost all of Jaws over the years. I have never sat down and watched the entire movie. It was not something my mom watched, and it wasn't something my dad watched, so I didn't have any exposure to it as a kid. And then it was something that was referenced quite often because it's a movie that had a large impression on people. So then I would pick up through the references, basically everything about it. And then sometimes it would pop on TV and I'd see parts of things that happened inside of it. But I just never got around to watching the whole thing. And I've seen it now. I saw it for this podcast. You know why we would see that on this podcast?
Oh, because of the month that we're in?
Yes. And what month is that, Dan?
Did we officially settle on the second one?
Yes, yes.
It is officially the month of Steven Septemberg.
Yep. That's a good one. Yeah.
We're not messing around with trying to make sure all of the letters of each word are in there the whole time. With the mistake we made with Denzel Augustishtington or whatever.
Yeah, because we're gonna have problems with the other months in the rest of the year if we were to try to do that.
Steven Septemberg? Can't do the P right after the R. Doesn't work.
No, but
see, it's Steven Septemberg.
Yes, that was just fine. Everybody can figure it out. We're all on board. But the I just, for whatever reason, just didn't really check this out. It's incredibly historically important, but I kind of knew everything in it already.
That is a problem. Both just from seeing the bits and pieces to just being aware of it culturally. Because what? How many sequels did Jaws have? And then how many shark movies in the years afterward?
Weren't there 4 Jaws movies? Maybe. Sort of.
I don't know. Doesn't matter.
But anyway, I saw
every
one.
Every deep sea creature killing people movie is a ripoff of Jaws.
Yes, Wikipedia has a list of killer shark films.
The Meg, most recently released.
Yes, I'm not gonna watch that. And apparently there is Jaws 1975, Jaws 2 1978, Jaws 3D 1983, Jaws the Revenge, and then there's Jaws in Japan, which I can't tell if it's related to, it doesn't appear to be officially licensed.
Not an officially sanctioned Amblin film?
No. Yeah,
What even would be the premise of the sequels? Is it like the mother of the shark that they killed comes back for revenge?
Well, that's literally the plot of Jaws 3D.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Jaws 2. Chief Brody must protect the citizens after a second monstrous shark begins terrorizing the waters. So it's just the same. Oh, it's just a different director.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the one that there was a documentary about how it like was a giant disaster to film? I watched this not too long ago.
Yeah, the director was fired and different stuff happened.
And it took forever and there were all kinds of like environmental disasters, just like rain and storms and stuff. And they couldn't actually like finish the shoot.
Yeah, I have no interest really in these. I've seen parts of Jaws 3D because it was also on TV sometimes and the effects are laughably bad in it.
I don't think I've seen any of the other ones.
I don't really have any.
Is it Anaglyph? Is it an Anaglyph 3D movie?
They weren't broadcasting it in that. They were just broadcasting it flat. I've never seen any of its 3D footage in 3D.
Was it supposed to be Anaglyph in theaters, though? Is that what happened? Oh, my God. Look at this screenshot.
I don't know. I'm not. Okay. I can't look at the. What are we even talking about?
It's on IMDb. I'll send you the thing. It's just the effect.
We're not screen sharing, Dan.
Aren't we, though?
Yes. It's even. What Dan is showing me, of course, is one of the images of the shark in Jaws 3D. Which has been optically composited over the underwater walkway, and it is a shot where if it was playing, it would be swimming towards camera, just slightly to the left of the cameraman. But it is surrounded by an enormous, huge black matte line from where the negative was stamped out to put to the shark in, and there is an enormous garbage mat of kind of orange brown around it in a big ellipse.
And the colors don't match either, but
no,
there's a lot of bad effects here. Did you see that minute, the fake shark that I just said?
Yeah. It's that movie. The movie's hideous. We're really lucky that we don't have to do like a Jaws month, because just painful. There's a lot of really bad stuff in there. They have like an underwater sub, and it like tilts to the side, and then there's like a spill that causes it to eat through the mat that disintegrates part of the little underwater sub. It's just they did a really bad job putting that together. But
hopefully they made some money, because you know the original Jaws was good, and people would go see sequels because of it.
Well, it's also basically what gave us the blockbuster. So that's why we have that, which is
also what gave us Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, his career kind of took off after that, didn't it?
Yeah, after Jaws, he could basically do whatever he felt like doing.
Mm-hmm. And Steven Spielberg working with John Williams, first of many times, and then they would go on to work on more things. And it would also land him his job on Star Wars, because George knew him through Steven. So there you go.
There's not a ton of score in this movie, is there?
No, but it is very memorable, I would say.
Yeah, of course, the sharks theme or whatever.
Da-dun. Da-dun.
Mm-hmm.
Et cetera. No, but it's a very important movie, and it's put together in a very good way. It's doesn't feel overly long and weirdly boring like some 1970s films can. This is definitely the start of picking up the pace a bit. It still has opening credits, which is an innovation that George Lucas would bring later. But
it's just whether or not you're willing to pay the fine to violate the Directors Guild, Producers Guild union contract of putting everyone up front.
Yeah, it's interesting though to watch that nowadays, because then when you get to the end of this film, the end credits are incredibly short. There's like nothing in it.
Yeah,
it's like a shot of the beach, and then a couple things flash on, and then you're done.
Mm-hmm.
See you later, kids.
It does end pretty quickly. I mean, I guess you don't say anticlimactically, because it's got a climax. It's just the post climax, where there would usually be some sort of like wrap up scene where they go like meet with the mayor, who's like, oh gosh, I can't thank you enough for saving the town, now things can finally get back to normal. And then maybe like the dead kid's mom like sort of forgives him a little bit and apologizes for slapping him. Like, that's not here. They're just like, well, we're gonna kick in the water and head toward shore, the end.
I kind of like it, because we don't need to know how the rest of that's resolved.
No, we don't. I mean, yeah, it's a monster movie. Like, it's not. Mm-hmm. We're not really curious about the shark's motivation, aside from the fact that Richard Dreyfuss sort of sets us straight in the beginning there and says, all this thing does is swim, eat, and make little sharks.
Yeah, and this is a movie where you get set up with exactly what it's going to be about, shark killing. It's literally the first thing that happens. There's some teenagers being teenagers on a beach, but with way worse haircuts than you could think of. And then they have a couple of them go wander off. One of them passes out drunk on the beach, and the other one, who she's swimming out there, she gets killed a little bit.
Pretty irresponsible to black out at the ocean edge, given, you know, tides and things.
Yeah, I don't think he was. I think he maybe had imbibed just a little too much to think clearly about his decisions about where to take a nap. And
what about
time
an extra wrinkle to the police investigation if there was a drunk drowned kid next to a severed arm?
No. Besides, you'd miss out on his performance of trying to look shocked and confused and scared, and I don't know. He has an interesting palette of emotions.
Absolutely confused. He does confused, all right.
Yeah, they have the chief, Roy Scheider, sorry, not Schneider. And you might recognize him mainly from his role as captain of the Sea Quest.
you're saying the captain of the Sea Quest is in the movie Jaws?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he didn't know he was...
Not the other way around.
Yeah, he didn't know he was going to go on to be so famous from this role on Sequest, of course. But yeah.
I watched that show. It had that one kid, and he talked to the dolphin.
Yeah.
Who was that kid with the haircut? You know what I'm talking about.
I do, but I forgot his name right now.
Didn't he have three names, like Jonathan Taylor Thomas or some crap like that?
Well, I think so, but I just can't remember his name. You could like use Google or something. But
I'm looking.
he unfortunately did not. He's not around any longer.
Jonathan Brandis.
Yes, Jonathan Brandis.
Oh, that's right. He was in Ladybugs. Neverending Story.
Yeah. But anyway, that was really a show that was about the Amiga video toaster and Darwin, the talking dolphin, voiced by Frank Welker, with Roy Scheider.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But then he said this show is silly, and then he didn't agree to come back for the third season, and Michael Ironside stepped in.
Oh my God, Michael Ironside is very good.
Yes. Mm. But Michael Ironside is basically always Michael Ironside in literally every role that he's in. Whenever he shows up, he's just like, oh great, it's Michael Ironside. But Michael Ironside is not in Jaws. We do have the weird mayor, who I enjoy.
Specifically his wardrobe.
His blazers are pretty sweet. I like the anchor one.
Did you prefer the anchor one over the sort of like pastel rainbowy stripey one?
I think I do, just because the anchor one had a weird embossed stitching effect that kind of like made it pucker in strange ways when he would move his shoulders around. So that was an it really like let you know that it was a tacky jacket. While the pastel one, it was a little more subtle, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we're like one or two seasons away from like H&M carrying that anchor blazer.
Maybe they already do. There's a lot of
like little logo sort of like anchor like short sleeve button ups you can get, I think, but not necessarily the blazer.
Yeah, I feel like the anchor was more in style a couple of years ago as a piece of iconography. And I think like this year it's definitely more like Monstera like Birds in Paradise and that kind of stuff.
Oh, sure. I mean, it depends if you're talking about like large patterns mm-hmm. or the small sort of embroidered icons. I see both. But yeah, the large flowery, colorful male jumpsuit looking things are here.
Okay.
They're here.
But again,
you don't have to watch The Bachelor, do you?
No, I don't. Nor would I, even if it was the only thing on television.
Yeah.
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 But they have the whole setup with the mayor. He's like, yeah, so let's not talk about, you know, sharks. And, you know, it was just a boating accident. That's what it was, you know. And you don't understand. This is a summer town. We need summer dollars. And I was just like, oh, this is adorable. He's Jack Dorsey. just... in denial about his platform and situation and predators.
And we just, you know, he just provides the beaches for the users to make the choice of whether or not they want to go into the water.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God. Let's not...
No, let's not go down this road.
No.
But, yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, it's a small town. Like, all of their economy is based on tourism and stuff. And if suddenly all that goes away, that everyone's going to have a real bad year.
Yeah, because... people presumably come here, go to the beach, and then they leave. And they buy their ice cream cones or whatever. And like that supports the local economy.
Stay at the hotels, eat at the restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then if they don't come here, you know, if they go, they're going to go to the other beaches. So,
yeah.
Yeah. That's your primary concern. Because once, if it was just one little shark thing and it went away by itself, then wouldn't that be convenient and you would have made everybody panic over nothing?
Yeah, it's also convenient that it's Chief Brody's first season out there on Amity Island. And mm-hmm. He might be a little overly cautious given that he's not a fan of water in general.
Which, you know, I'm not sure how that interview process went for getting him hired.
Sleepy little beach town down here. You like hanging out at the beach? No, hate it. Oh, you're perfect?
Here's your house on the beach.
Here's your hillside beach. Beautiful home. Presumably, I don't know, free or subsidized. He had a very cool convertible like Bronco or whatever, too.
Yeah. I do like he has his own personal dock with a dinghy. So that's nice. Mm-hmm. You know, just in case he needs to not go on a boat
escape
in a hurry.
By water.
Yeah.
He bought his kids a little boat for his birthday.
Yeah. But then they, you know, freak out about it because they don't want the kid playing by the water because of the shark attack.
That's a lot of freak out, try to calm down, freak out a little bit more, try to calm down. Right up until things start to go horribly wrong there. But shortly after this is when you get probably the most iconic scene in the whole thing. It's Spielberg very much being his Spielberginess, and a scene that I was forced, I guess, to study in film school, but also is totally worth studying because the way it's shot and edited and choreographed and sound designed is just superb in every way. And that is the scene that leads up to the Zoom Dolly at the end there.
Yeah, the attack on the beach, the first day of the beach being open.
There are so many amazing dolly moves that hand off from one character to another, and then you've got the people walking in front wiping the lens and then jumping to a tighter focal length on Brody like how many different times, and then all
split
of the
diopter. Don't forget the split diopter.
The split diopter when he leans over and looks over the shoulder, and then you've got there's just so many good things with the close ups and like the sound of the kids splashing and the one kid out on the raft sort of like conspicuously 10, 15 feet behind all of the other kids playing in front. It is film school right there. Just like watch that scene over and over again and figure out what they did with the camera and the sound and all of that. It's perfect.
Yeah. And I did not recognize the name Bill Butler, but of course I've seen things he's done. I just didn't know it. He did a good job here on this project, and I also think Verna Fields, who did the editing, did a very good job, and she would go on to edit a couple other things and be in management for Universal Studios because of this. So that's interesting.
That's a good movie to have on your resume, I think.
Yeah,
I'm taking a look at Bill Butler because you're right. I know the name, but I don't really.
Yeah.
You got Cuckoo's Nest, you got Grease. Deliverance. You've probably never seen Deliverance, have you?
No, but I know there's the banjo and it goes near 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 near.
Yeah, you get the dueling banjos with the weird little kid and I'm trying to remember who's playing the banjo. I think it's John Voight, maybe. No, it's the other guy.
Yeah.
John Voight, he's real young, he's got big sideburns.
Okay.
Don't watch Deliverance.
Thank you.
Unless you want to be further scared off from hanging out in the marshy, swampy South.
No.
I mean, you're from Florida, though, so like you'd probably be kind of okay with some of that.
What would make you think that I want to be in a swamp?
It reminds you of home.
No.
It's home adjacent.
No. No, not at all, Dad.
No.
No, I'm going to make you go to Tampa someday.
I am going to... I think approximately Daytona Beach, but a little bit south of there for a wedding in October.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's, I don't have the city on here. Wait.
I don't know. I could start naming cities. Port St. Lucie, Jupiter.
That might be it. It's like 10, 15 minutes south of the Daytona Beach airport.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I don't like that coast very much.
Too swampy for you?
No, just kind of gross. But you'll see.
It's all right.
Yeah. I mean, can't be any worse than Arizona, so.
Yeah. It's pretty hot and humid here.
As we have discussed, Florida's Arizona by the sea. But, yeah. 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 You stand in the water?
Very near, I believe. I believe we are co-staying in an Airbnb with some other people.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah, it's a wedding.
Yeah.
Weddings.
You sound so happy about it.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It'd be good to see some people.
Yes.
People are good.
People, I don't know about that one. Let's not some make these crazy claims you can't support with evidence.
You think people are just inherently bad, and no matter where you go, they're going to be bad to you?
Yeah, I mean, Jaws is really doing us a favor when you think about it.
By removing some people from the ecosystem?
Yeah.
Fewer people out there, fewer people to be mean to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, I don't know.
No, I don't know. I really like the, like we were saying, the part in the film here with this first attack, it's all very, it's done very well. And they even have the expectations subverted, that, you know, it's just kids playing around with a cardboard fin.
Totally. And then the old man with the black swim cap too.
Yeah. And then you flip on over to the other area right near there, and there's another alarm. And this time, there's some hesitation. Like, people aren't, like, immediately springing into action, but Roy Schneider is making his way through the crowd over there because they just had that other situation on the other side. So it kind of plays with your expectations. You get that sort of buildup and then the release of, oh, it was just kids. And then it's like, oh, wait, no, there's actually a shark over here in this lagoon with the other kids.
I think it did a pretty good job, too, of like when there's the panic with the kids of like dragging everybody out of the water, and there's some close ups of like the old people just kind of like getting trampled as everyone's like running over them and people like dragging them out of the water and the sand because they're just they've been like pounded into the ground by this like mass hysteria.
Yeah, I mean, I was many years ago, I was in Miami and we were swimming off of South Beach on the Atlantic side, not the intercoastal side. And there was a shark. Somebody was yelling shark and people were coming in off the, and it really was like a stampede, like in Jaws. But then after, when everybody's on the shore and they're just like, did you see anything? Did you see anything? And nobody really saw anything. And then somebody's like, oh, I think it was a brown nurse shark. And that was it. Like, but then nobody wanted to get back in the water because it's not like you caught it or anything. You don't know. So
that was, don't really have like teeth or something, like a little bit, but not really, right?
No, the brown nurse shark doesn't do anything to you, but it would freak you out if you just saw something that looked of that shape in the area. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they do wind up,
not all sharks though.
They do wind up having their thing where they're gonna put out a bounty for catching the shark.
It's the mother of the dead kid. She wants it found and killed.
Yeah.
$3,000. That's a lot of money in 1975 dollars.
Inflation's funny. But you get the back of the little nails on the chalkboard thing. And it's Robert Shaw being super weird in the back of the room and sort of mumbling.
Given to understand you had a little bit of trouble with Robert Shaw's performance in this movie.
Oh my god. Like, I realize that for many people it's an iconic performance, that he embodies the character of Quint this weird sea captain perfectly for some people, but I find him unintelligible, and it really was distracting to me some of the times when he'd start talking and the sentences would just be like, you couldn't even write down what he was saying. You'd have to like go back and like try to listen to it again and be like, I'm sorry, could you say that again? Cause
maybe I have C ears then, cause I feel like I understood most of what he said.
No, I also, because he's mumbling through a lot of this stuff, it doesn't help that he's saying things that aren't like real things that people would say. Like, there's a lot of just sort of I don't know, C-spun wisdom about stuff that doesn't seem to translate well into mumbly English, where you can't quite pick up every word in it, so it doesn't help with context clues or anything. So I found him just strange, but he's only introduced here. He doesn't do his big stuff yet in the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get this very peculiar local sea captain fella who is in no way related to the tourism section of the island. He's just, you know, he's been there, he's seen some stuff. He kind of retired. He fishes a little bit. It's hard to tell if he fishes for his business or just kind of for fun, because he's got a barn full of shark jaws or whatever.
Yeah, well, he has in his weird introduction, he has a whole, like, you all know me and how I make my money or something like that, even if you don't like... He has some weird thing that he says about that. So, obviously, he has some sort of business that people don't enjoy, I guess?
He's probably selling shark fin soup, honestly. Like, he's one of those creepy guys, because we later find out that he has some past history with... sharks and bad things, and he's not particularly fond of them, so mm-hmm. he could just kind of be like the loony old guy who kills sharks for sport.
Yeah, he's a regular Captain Ahab, just kind of a kooky old man who boils shark bones.
Yeah, he seems weird and like kind of peculiar when he's sitting in the back of the room there at the press conference or whatever, but then when he stands up and he's actually like quite large and sort of looming over these people and also insane looking, then you're like, oh, I don't want to get to know this guy. Like, no. he looks like the living version of the kind of ghost that would like haunt a ship in Scooby-Doo, but like he's still alive. He hasn't died yet, but once he has, he'll be like a haunted ship captain in a Scooby-Doo episode.
You pull off the mask and it was really the mayor all along, but
no, it would be the shark underneath.
Oh, I don't think that's how Scooby-Doo works.
Because he was self-loathing and he really is a shark on the inside.
Oh.
Yeah, well. Self-destructive.
No, but the after this, they were doing all their stuff and trying to get people out of there, but a lot of people want to be on boats so they can go catch it, and they're, you know, shooting the water and other
bringing sticks of dynamite,
other silly things. But this gets us introduced to Dreyfus, and he, you know, has his research stuff.
Yeah, they don't call him Richard Denham Dreyfus for nothing, do they?
No, he's I don't know. I think. I believe it is a fashion thing where you're not supposed to wear all one color if you're very short.
Is that what it is, if you're short?
I believe that it is considered ill-advised, that it supposedly makes you look smaller.
It just looks like you're wearing a pair of pants that you pulled up to your shoulders.
And
turned the pockets inside out and stuck your arms through there.
And he may be the shortest adult in the film, because he's... walking around next to Roy and next to Robert Shaw, and so you're just like, yeah, you're itty bitty.
He's good though. I like his performance in the movie. He's very impassioned.
Yeah, I mean, it was not a criticism of his performance. It was just
no.
He rocks a
denim jacket and denim pants at a couple of different spots in the movie,
and the weird beard and sideburns and all that.
I thought his beard looked pretty normal. It was a little peculiarly curated in areas.
Yeah,
but it was the 70s. It was the time of bushy beardiness.
Yeah, really. Everybody in this movie has bad hair.
Robert Shaw, like those sideburns that connect down to like his shoulders. I don't know how he did that, because like that would be so uncomfortable to just to have like hair on your the joint of your jaw, like where it goes around the back, like that looked, oh, it just looks itchy.
Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, they have the introduction of Dreyfus, and he gives us some much needed comic relief for the tense moments that are in here. And
speaking of Richard Dreyfus, you ever see that SNL skit where oh God, what's the guy's name who plays Richard Dreyfuss trying out for C-3PO for Star Wars?
I mean, I've seen that skit, but I don't know if that's the skit you're talking about, because you're talking about the guy.
Yeah. No, that's the skit where they're like, who's inside there? It's me, Richard Dreyfuss. Just that voice is stuck in my head as Richard Dreyfuss's voice. When you hear this one, you're like, oh, I guess you have a normal voice too. Is that Daryl Hammond in the suit?
I don't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen that sketch, but they immediately catch a shark, and they don't think that it's the shark, or Dreyfuss doesn't think it's the shark, but everybody seems pretty willing to call it a done deal and to reopen the beaches.
Except for Richard Dreyfuss, who spent a lot of time measuring the length and then the width and then the length and then the width and then the length and then the width again.
Yeah, it was a little strange. But
yeah, he didn't even like reach in to sort of like inspect the teeth or something. Like, they didn't really give him any business to do necessarily other than measuring the jaws.
Yeah. And of course you had the whole tooth thing with the boat and you know, the dead body in the boat, and you know, because you found the tooth, it must be a great weight, but you drop the tooth, so you don't have the tooth.
You can't prove nothing.
Yeah, he doesn't have the tooth, the whole tooth, and nothing but the tooth.
I also laughed at, and so did Amanda as she sort of like walked in the room right at the right moment of when somebody's like, yeah, but what kind of shark is it? And Richard Dreyfuss pops up with the pen in his mouth and goes, it's a tiger shark. And the guy goes, oh, what? It's the very like country bumpkin sort of sea captain fella. It was very funny.
It was very strange the amount of the lack of shark knowledge that people seem to possess in the film,
especially for living on an island.
Yeah, but fortunately, one of my favorite shots is when Roeschneider's looking at that book that has the diagram of a shark, and there's like a pan across the diagram, and it's just like, this is a fin, you know?
Oh, right, where it's got like the it's like, this is where the nose is, and they have sensory receptors.
It's like Sharks for Dummies. It is, but there's like such a dramatic pan across the diagram of a shark. But that just amused me. But Dreyfuss explains, you know, oh, probably got caught in the Gulf Stream, yada yada yada, and we got to examine like the guts of it. And the mayor's like, "No, we're not going to do an autopsy." You know,
well, I don't want that kid's guts spilling out all over the deck there. And I guess you can't really just transport a 2,000-pound shark back to your lab super easy.
No, you can't. But you can take it home to your beach cottage.
I think they just gut it right there, hanging on the dock? They just went back out there?
Oh, I thought they took it back indoors.
I think it was just framed in a way that you couldn't really tell where it was. I think they just got drunk and they went back out to the dock.
All right, well, anyway, they split it open and stuff comes out. And, you know, I thought they smelled bad on the outside, et cetera. But it's a Louisiana license plate and some other stuff. You know, the tiger shark probably came up on the Gulf, the Gulf Stream, you know, warm waters, et cetera. But it probably was not the territorial, great white that they're looking for. And, you know, they do their night boat thing, where they look at the boat.
Yeah, this is a scene that I didn't particularly remember. Well, I mean, I remember part of it. I remember the tooth and I remember the dead head floating into the hole of the boat, which they didn't really investigate, or it didn't seem like to bring that up as a point of contention with the mayor as like another bit of evidence for like maybe not opening the beach. Like, were we supposed to assume that like maybe that guy drowned or something because his boat was sinking? But anyway, but the part that I forget was where he's got the big fancy boat with all of the like technology on it, and he's like, yeah, basically my family is just rich and I like buying all this stuff so I can track sharks because I like sharks.
Yeah, everybody's gotta have a hobby.
That's one of those, it's one of the pieces of the movie that's not particularly relevant and also is just kind of slightly out of place. I mean, he could have just been like, government grant, study sharks. And like, okay.
Well, I mean, that's what Roeschneider asked him about, if it was a government grant.
Yeah, but like, we didn't even need most of that.
No, but
he didn't even have to have a fancy boat or like that technology. He could just be like, puts his ear to the hull of the boat kind of guy to like listen or something.
Well, basically, other than the lights, it didn't really come into play. But I don't know why he thought it was a good idea to go in a wetsuit and scuba gear by himself to investigate a damaged boat in the feeding grounds of the Great White at night.
When he's active. Pretty confident that the tiger shark was not the shark, but maybe it sort of like eased him off a little bit. So he's like, oh, maybe it is. And I'll just, you know, hop down underneath to see if this boat has a shark sized mouth hole in it.
Yeah. Well, he gets out of there. They, you know, have all that stuff and like, oh, I lost the tooth. I don't have it. Blah, blah, blah. There's graffiti on the billboards and stuff. But you know, that's what you got. And you got, the reopening and the controversy and you want to keep it closed, et cetera. All that good stuff.
I'm sure I remember, somebody else gets eaten next, right?
Yes. Yes. And then that, the mother, she's none too pleased about that. Yeah. But that's the thing. And then the mayor's all shook up and he's like, oh, my kids were out there, you know? It's like, well,
could happen to me too. Yeah. Cause his, Rich Rider's kid ends up in the hospital with shock because the shark, eats that other dude in that like really oddly shaped like bathtub boat, but like skips the kid and, but just goes like right past him and freaks him out. But yeah, they finally shut it down and, the mayor is despondent and freaking out a little bit. And Rashadar convinces him to like sign a piece of paper that says they can hire Quint to go kill the shark, and then we get to hang out with Quint for the rest of the movie. Well, most of the rest of the movie.
Yeah, he has to sign some sort of bond or something, or
yeah, because he wants Quint wants $10,000. He wants more than the $3,000 that the lady was offering to kill the shark.
Yeah, and so it was a big deal, which is why they wouldn't pay it. But now they go to Quint and they're like, oh, you need crew for this, so you got us. And he's like, Richard Dreyfuss, tie this knot.
He's like, sir, I have crewed 3 ships through the North Atlantic. Apparently, I think I may have found a second voice I can do aside from Mark Maron.
Is maybe like, Mark Maron and parody and Richard nasally Dreyfuss. Richard Dreyfuss.
I can do Daryl Hammond doing Richard Dreyfuss.
Oh boy! I mean, everybody's gonna have skills.
I got 2 skills. I'll try to do that on my next voiceover gig. I'll try and do Richard Dreyfuss voice.
Yeah. I'm sure clients will love it. But they you know, finally get Quint on board with getting them on board. But Quint spends the entire time being like, I don't know, sort of aloof and disinterested, but like negging them a little bit. Like it's a very strange dynamic.
You city boys, all you rich college boys with your gizmos and your gadgets and such.
Yes, yes, he's so weird. And they have that one shot of the boat leaving the harbor, and they view it through the frame of the window with a frame of a shark's mouth, the cartilage there. It's not the smoothest camera move, but
well, you know,
you got to keep the boat in frame.
he couldn't afford all the fancy technology in this movie.
Yeah, but by the way,
not to interrupt you, some cursory googling has revealed to me that I believe $10,000 in 1975 is equivalent to $47,000 almost in 2018. That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
That's a lot of money to kill a shark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
especially to give to that weirdo.
Yeah, yeah. I think another problem is like, I don't know how you believe Quint necessarily that he's capable of doing this thing.
I mean, probably more than one person has like showed up at his door asking him to like sign some sort of petition and like peeked their head in to see the just dozens and dozens of shark jaws all over the wall.
Yeah.
It's probably why they steer clear of him, but they also know like he's a force to be reckoned with when it comes to murdering sharks.
Mm-hmm.
Should we talk about the social implication of this movie eventually, too, about how it, like, scared the crap out of everyone and they, like, got all mad and angry and scared of sharks and, like, went out murdering them?
Yeah, let's do that after, though.
That'll be great bonus content. Really uplifting.
Yeah. So they go out to the... They take their little boat out there. And they start chumming the waters. Roy makes a face because it doesn't smell great. But then they have that one shot of him tossing it like loosely over his shoulders and stuff and not really paying attention. And then the shark comes up out of the water. It's very nice. I like that shot.
Oh, the chumming down there on the boat?
Yeah, yeah. I like that shot. I've seen that shot many, many times before that.
Do you know when the first time you saw that shot was? Because I know the first time I saw that shot.
I don't know. It could have been in like a clip reel of something, or it could have been a GIF, or I don't know. I've seen it lots of times. Like, I know it's in the movie.
Yes. I think I was approximately 6, 8 years old, something like that, because my cousin, whom you have met out there in Los Angeles, he had this DVD that was kind of like an Encarta encyclopedia, but about movies. It had like 3 sentences about a bunch of different movies, but it had about 12 different movies, had like little tiny like 20-second clips on the compact disc ROM that it came with. So one of those clips was, in fact, the slow ahead and then the chumming and then the you're going to need a bigger boat, and that's where it stopped. So we watched that clip many times.
Yeah. I think everyone has heard the line, you're going to need a bigger boat.
Mm-hmm. Did you put together also the thing about the cage when Robert Shaw is giving Richard Dreyfuss crap about the cage, how that was the line that they made the silly salsa shark pun out of in Clerks?
No.
You remember Salsa Shark from Clerks, where he's doing the
yes.
tortilla chip in the salsa?
Yes, but I don't remember the cage part.
Cage goes into salsa.
Yes.
Man goes to cage goes in salsa, shark's in salsa, our shark. It's a much better line in Jaws, because you can just see Robert Shaw just sort of like grinning like, really? You're going to get in this cage, and you can put that cage in the water with the shark out there, this big shark that we're chasing. You're going to do that? It's a great idea.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Well, they have a bit of a contentious relationship until after this first shark experience where they harpoon it with a barrel, which floats so that they can see where the shark is, except if the shark dives super deep or something, and then it goes underwater.
It's also hard to tire the shark out because he's got to hold down that ballast the whole time.
Right. But they only manage to land one, and it gets away. So then they're like, well, I don't know, sunsetting. Time to open up our apricot brandy.
homemade apricot brandy.
Oh, God, it was so weird. Of all the things to be like, I need an entire case of apricot brandy. It's like, ugh.
You know, see, the problem with Quint is he was too normal and he didn't have enough affectation.
Yes. Yeah, no. You gotta make sure he has some characteristics that you'll remember.
He's gotta stand out. Otherwise, he's just any regular old boat captain amongst, you know, the dozens of other boat captains in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, whiskey would have been so boring. He needs apricot brandy. That's what he needs. Yeah, but so they get plastered on apricot brandy while they're telling each other stories about the injuries that they've sustained from various sharks, and this is how Dreyfuss and Shaw bond in the film, and they
showing off scars. It's what happens when you're hanging out with a bunch of fellas drinking. Eventually, you get bored and you start showing scars.
Yes. Well, I mean, the only scar I really have is like I burn myself making flan. so I don't think that would have impressed Robert Shaw very much.
You have a permanent burn scar from making flan?
Yeah, on the inside of my left hand, on my ring finger and my middle finger, there is some scar tissue. Yeah, because you may not know this, but caramel, which is part of flan, is superheated sugar.
Did it stick to you?
It does, because you see, it doesn't. It's not like oil or like water. That's when it gets hot and you get some on you. It doesn't like go off of you.
Yeah, it's like napalm. That's what it was invented for, because it sticks to you.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I'm just gonna stay on your hand and continue to burn you. So that was it's great. So yeah, but yes, I was making flan.
You'd be Roy Scheider in this scene. You'd be like, look at this, but I'm not really gonna throw my credentials on the table for these fellas.
Yeah. No. And, you know, of course, Dreyfus has his funny line about the wound in his chest from his heart being damaged by someone.
Did you catch the line Roy Scheider kicks back to him right before he says that?
No.
He opens up the buttons of his Henley shirt and he goes, "You see that?" And Roy Scheider goes, "You're wearing a sweater." Just because he's got his
right
curly little chest hairs underneath there.
Yeah. Well, then they keep drinking, and then they're attacked by a shark.
The shark rams into the boat because apparently it is nonplus about having to continually drag this barrel around.
Well, probably didn't like the music that they were singing.
Oh, they're singing?
Yeah. But I think it's weird how focused this shark is on vengeance, seemingly. Because it seems like this is not a good deal for the shark to go after this boat and these people who have managed to be the only people to have injured it in any way so far in the film. You think it'd be like, I'm going to go back to the beach and nibble on some more children or something.
Yeah, I get the idea that maybe that, like, again, this is an unprecedentedly large shark that has very few predators, so it's probably not used to, like, having any pushback. It's just like, if it wants to wreck a boat, need a person, it can do that. But yeah, it's just, you know, the nature of the movie that it has to eventually pivot from just like, oh, it's just, you know, nature's, you know, evolution's most refined killer that also suddenly gets mad and is kind of smart and just, like, I don't know, is aggressive once aggressed towards by others.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a word. Aggressed is not a word.
But they, you know, deal with shark stuff, and they have some more shark stuff in the morning. They get the boat engines and pumps and stuff, and things are not great. They're not in tip top shape.
The motor burns out. They're sinking a little bit from getting rammed. They get, you know, he's got his little, like, handheld bilge pumps trying to get a little bit of water out, which Roy Scheider gives up on real fast because he's just frustrated. And then somewhere in here is when the shark comes back and Roy Scheider goes to call for help, and Quint kind of loses it and starts smashing the radio with his little baseball bat.
Because he doesn't want to lose his $10,000.
That, and also, I think he's just like,
Ahab.
Boy, stay focused. We're doing a thing right now, and I don't need you panicking on the radio. I need you over here helping.
I don't think it's that second thing that you said.
It's probably not. I don't know that it's entirely about the money. I think it's just like, hey, we're here to kill this thing, and I need your help killing this. And we're definitely going to kill it because killing it's all we got to do.
I guess. But anyway,
it doesn't strike me as motivated by money, really.
Well, he's motivated by money because otherwise he would have charged them the $3,000 that they were asking for.
Well, at this point, it's personal because, you know, shark's ruining his boat, coming after him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that's why I said the Ahab thing.
A little bit.
But, you know, Roy is unhappy, but they have to deal with the shark stuff now. And then the shark starts eating the boat and destroying the back of it.
Yeah, I think the one shot in this movie, there's probably a couple that don't hold up super well, but the one that really definitely doesn't hold up is when the shark kind of just, like, leaps 12 feet out of the air and lands on the rear of the boat.
Yeah. And they, you know, and Dreyfus went in his cage, and the cage was destroyed by the shark ramming into it over and over again. There is some underwater footage of a shark that they used, and they cut that against all the terribly unfortunate puppet stuff. But
looked real good. They got a real grumpy, angry shark that got tangled up in a cage.
Yeah. But they separate out Dreyfus from everybody else. So it's just Scheider and Shaw on the boat. And the boat is sinking. And Shaw gets eaten in half-ish, sort of, mostly. And that leaves Scheider on the boat, up in the mast, with his little gun and the shark apparently ate the one of the compressed air tanks that he had been warned not to mess around with.
When Shredder went back inside, the shark like burst through the side of the boat to like attack him from a different direction, and Roy Shredder like tried to hit him with the air tank and then like threw it at it, and when it went in the shark's mouth.
Yeah, and then it just hangs in the corner of its mouth like it's a pizza crumb or something. Yeah. Like
you can't get it out of there. It's just kind of stuck in a tooth.
It's like spinach. But it's a tank of compressed air. But he keeps shooting it, and then he finally hits it, and then it explodes. Like, really explodes.
Yeah, you got that the nice line, the smile, you son of a bitch, right as it explodes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice line.
Kablooey.
Yeah. And then he's, like, barely clinging to the boat and really stressed out, and Dreyfus is like, this is a good time for me to sneak up on this armed man who's been through this experience and not say anything until I'm right next to him.
The shark blew up. Everyone's got their guard back down.
Yeah, everybody's so calm now. Those two
electric boogaloo should pick up, like, right where this one left off. Like, They're kicking and pedaling back to the shore, and they're all smiling and happy. And then suddenly, like, the other shark that was, like, right behind the main jaws the whole time just, like, sneaks up and eats them.
Okay. Well, except they had a sequel to this. Is this, like, one of those sequels where we're pretending the other sequel didn't happen?
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because it would eat Richard Dreyfuss and Roy Scheider, so they couldn't be in the other sequel that actually happened.
Oh. This sounds very complicated.
No, you just eat them.
Yeah. Well, they paddle on the wreckage back towards maybe the land. And hooray, happy ending. Shot of the beach and titles.
I mean, it's not the happiest of endings. You've had five people getting eaten by the shark.
Yeah, but the shark's dead.
It is now.
Well, that's what happens when time moves on. We all
die. What happens when you mess with the best?
You die like the rest. Shark.
You die like a shark with a compressed air in the mouth.
Yeah, so let's talk about the cultural effects of this film. Like how people thought that sharks traveled near the surface with their fins sticking out the top because that was an effective way to show the shark in this film. But it is not really how that happens.
Yeah. There's also, I guess,
bunch of shark murder.
A lot of shark murder. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I had another point about the cultural repercussions, but I lost it now thinking about shark murder.
I'm sorry, I distracted you with shark murder.
Oh, we have to at least mention on some level the way that this movie was made accidentally as really good, because you don't really see a ton of the shark, which makes it all the more menacing because the shark didn't work very well because it was a crappy piece of animatronics, because this is a very low budget movie.
Yeah.
So then they sort of happy accidented themselves into a very suspenseful movie.
Yes. And I think it really helps, because if we had seen more of the thing that we saw, it would have been really bad, because it just did not have the articulation and did not look like a real flesh and blood shark.
It's really in the eyes too, like they say. You know, the hardest thing to get right in CGI is the eyes. Same thing with the stupid shark.
Have you ever been on the Universal Studios ride where they have the shark come out of the water and it smells like burning rubber?
Is that at the one out there, or is that...
That's the one out here. But they also have it in Florida, but they don't actually have a, like, soundstage or set. So you're just kind of, like, driving around sort of a themed tiny little tram ride.
Which is the one from Mallrats where they got married?
What?
You remember that they get married where Jaws pops out of the water in Mallrats?
It's just been a long time since I've seen Mallrats, so I forgot. I know that Mallrats and all Kevin Smith movies are your corner touchstone for
all
cinema, but I haven't seen it recently.
Yeah, this is the shark from that Kevin Smith movie. But I don't know. I've seen Did they use in this movie the parking lot that is a outdoor shooting area at Paramount for the water stuff, or was this all practical water? Adam, Martha's Vineyard.
I don't actually know the answer to that because, like I said, I don't know everything about this. If we were true fans, if we were true super fans, we would know everything about how this was filmed and put together. And there are people who are listening to this podcast right now who are probably losing their ish because we don't really know because we weren't really paying attention.
Seth would know all of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's probably very upset with me right now.
He's not listening.
Yeah. So apparently, some of the underwater scenes were shot at the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer water tank in Culver City with stuntmen as stand-ins for Dreyfus and the shark attacks in the cage.
Right. Okay, but they didn't use the Paramount outdoor parking lot thing.
I don't see it mentioned, but that could have been a possibility.
I was looking at a few of the shots where I was like, well, this could really be just sort of a big blue wall back there with some water in front of it. It doesn't really have to be practical.
Yep.
$8 million estimated budget. That's absurd.
Well, I mean, it was $1,975.
How much? Right. Fair point. That's what? That's almost what? Like $40,000?
Sure.
$40 million.
It was 37, was I thought what you
said. They gave Robert Shaw $8 million. Yeah. Cumulative worldwide gross, $470 million. That's very impressive.
Mm. Yeah. And it was the era of, it kicks off the era of the blockbusters. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a good movie. It's hard to really, like, say anything in particularly interesting about it or can't really say anything new about it because it's A, old, and B, just, like, incredibly well-known and famous.
Mm-hmm. Two scenes were altered following the test screenings as the audience's screams had covered up Scheider's bigger boat one-liner. Brody's reaction after the shark jumps behind him was extended, and the volume of the line was raised. Spielberg also decided that he was greedy for one more scream and reshot the scene in which Hooper discovers Ben Gardner's body, using $3,000 of his own money after Universal refused to pay for the reshoot. The underwater scene was shot in Field Swimming Pool in Encino, California, using a LifeCast latex model of Craig Kinsbury's head attached to a fake body, which is now placed in the wrecked boat's hull. To simulate the murky waters of Martha's Vineyard, powdered milk was poured into the pool, which was covered with a tarp.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So everything up until like he pulled the tooth out, that probably was all still there. But then the close up where he goes back and looks again, and there's the head in there. That was the reshoot.
Apparently,
interesting. Yeah, the timing on the "you're gonna need a bigger boat" is iconic, but also very odd because he backs up very slowly, very far.
Yeah, well, supposedly it makes sense if you think everybody is screaming in the audience because of the jump scare that he can't immediately say the line, otherwise people aren't going to hear it.
Yeah, and I had forgotten that he says the bigger boat thing again later. Like, it wasn't just a one-off line. He's like, so we're going to go get a bigger boat, right? Like, aw, you kind of ruined it.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Shaw did not get along with Dreyfus.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, too.
Yeah.
it's not terribly surprising.
Yeah.
But it added a little life to their performances, I guess.
We shoot 5 scenes on a good day, 3 in an average day, and none in a bad day.
Together? Or?
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. I like the idea of Robert Shaw just sort of like perpetually giving him crap. It's the character. It's what he was supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's just very method.
According to this line from Wikipedia, sourced from somewhere else, as Spielberg put it years later, the film went from a Japanese Saturday matinee horror flick to more of a Hitchcock, the less you see, the more you get thriller. In another interview, he similarly declared, "The shark not working was a godsend. It made me become more like Alfred Hitchcock than like Ray Harryhausen." take that, Ray Harryhausen. but, yeah.
No bronze owls in this movie.
No. That owl's cute.
I could see you getting a sort of little statue of that owl and putting it in your apartment.
Oh, no. I don't like the movie. I wouldn't want any merchandise from it around me.
Well, you don't have to like the movie to like the prop.
Well,
or is that a personal point of pride? You won't buy the prop if you don't like the movie.
Well, it's just like every time I look at the prop, then I think of the movie. And if I don't like the movie, then I'm thinking about how much I don't like the movie.
Well, just look, it's an owl. Look at the owl. Appreciate it for what it is. It's an
but
owl.
It's not an owl. It's a bronze mechanical owl from Clash of the Titans.
Sure.
And then I would also think about how they made a remake.
Yeah, with Sam Worthington. There's two of them.
Yeah.
I saw those movies. I don't know why. I think I saw one of them in 3D also.
Well, remember, the Clash of the Titans was basically what killed a lot of big 3D productions because audiences were very upset.
It was very bad 3D. Yeah, I remember. Wasn't mm-hmm. that what that one was? It was post-converted, but like very quickly and very poorly.
Yes, because Avatar made a lot of money. So the studio was looking to capitalize on all that money that they could get from a 3D movie release by hacky post-converting it sloppily as quickly as possible.
I think I remember that too. Wasn't the movie basically done and then they basically gave, it was probably Stereo D or somebody, they said like, you have 6 weeks, make this 3D?
Yes, I think it was Stereo D.
Yeah, but it was something absurd, like 6 weeks, and they're like, yeah, that's ready to go.
Yeah. And that basically, like, audiences just were like, oh, 3D is the worst, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sure James Cameron to this day is probably like, Clash of the Titans, you ruined my movies.
No, Avatar 2 is going to come out, and it's going to have been so long since everyone forgot about their distaste about 3D.
Do you think Avatar 2 is going to be high frame rate?
I think... I was just about to say I think no because none of the other high frame rate movies have been particularly well received, but that's the same argument for why he pushed for 3Ds. Like, yeah, but I'm going to do it right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't enjoy looking at it. I can't imagine he enjoys looking at it because he's made movies his whole life.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. I mean,
he's just like the higher the frame rate, the more realistic the 3D, like the more he gets an erection or something.
Oh, Dan.
Apologies.
Mental image no one really needs.
I mean, but like you can't make a rational argument for why high frame rate would be better than 24.
No, I mean, but that hasn't stopped James Cameron from doing things before. Anyway, this is it. You know, troubled production turned into the big old lump of gold by the end.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Very clearly shot on some very crappy, very slow film because everyone has like massive lights blasting in their face in the entire movie.
I think that might be kind of an intentional look they're going for because it seems like nearly underexposed in a lot of these shots, especially like the night dusk stuff, you know?
Eastman 100T film. It's not the slowest film stock, but it's the second slowest film stock.
I don't really keep my own personal records about slow film stock.
It's 100 ISO.
Oh.
You got a DSLR. You know what that means.
Yeah. No, but I mean, like, you said this particular film stock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So is there a 50?
I believe there is a 50, but actually this is 100T, so they would have had to put a filter on it to shoot outdoors to convert it to daylight, which would have lost at least one or two stops. Actually, I think the tungsten to daylight conversion filter loses 2.25, if I remember, or 2.33.
This is exciting.
Yeah, so that would be like 25 ISO film. That would be really good. Everyone's got 8K lights blasted right in their face.
Well, the quality of the picture that I saw as mastered for iTunes was... Oh, no, sorry. Not for iTunes, for Amazon Prime. Apparently, it's on Prime right now. It was fine for it looks everything.
Good. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about these slow film stocks. They usually have pretty small grains, so they look nice.
Yeah. Like, I have no objection.
It's like, do you remember the diner scenes in Pulp Fiction where what's his name and the lady robbed the place?
Yes, but I don't really remember the specific things about the look of the film.
There's just this. It had the same sort of like massive hot light look because Quentin Tarantino wanted it to be as nice looking as possible. So I think he shot it with 50 ISO film. So everyone was just like baking inside that diner just because it was a million degrees from all the lights.
Ew. Yeah. No.
Probably smelled real good.
Ew. So I think that really wraps it up. You can swim back towards shore now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Got to kick at the same speed, otherwise we'll do circles.
Yes. We're well known for our synchronized swimming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You want the right barrel or the left barrel?
I'll take the left barrel.
Okay. I like the right barrel anyway. Wait, that makes me Richard Dreyfuss, so that works.
Okay.
I'm the shorter one with the annoying voice.
Say goodbye, Dan.
Goodbye, everyone. No, that was terrible. I can't do it. I can't say goodbye. I can only say Richard Dreyfuss lines.
God.
I think I've lost my Richard Dreyfuss voice.
Oh, that was so good. Oh, man.
It's terrible.
Wow.